Batter Off.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 91 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-host, Linda Surovich. Hi, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Kellyanne Healy. Hello, Kellyanne.
Hello, Allison. Hello, Linda.
Hello.
Hello.
So before we get started on the Mets, I kind of figured I would do a slightly new thing. This is just like a very small thing, but I want to do it on the pod because I opened this beer. I usually podcast with a beer in my hand just because the vibes are immaculate, as Marcus Stroman can attest. And this time my beer is a new one that I've never had before. And the name of it is Bagel and Schmear. And I feel like that's very on brand, not only for me, but also for like many listeners of this podcast. And I just had to buy this beer just for the can and the name alone. And the can art is elite. I tweeted it and you guys can look at it if you want. It's a bunch of like cartoon bagels, which is awesome. And so I'm going to taste it live on the pod and I'm going to give a short review. So I'm just going to take my first sip. This is delicious. So okay. Yeah, Bagel and Schmear by Other Half Brewing. Go and get it. It's nice and hoppy, but it's also got a nice tropical undertone to it. Really, really juicy, undercuts the hops. This is good stuff. It's a good hazy IPA. Go get it. Anyway, that's just a short aside. But yeah, we need some alcohol to deal with the Mets because every game, I think it was Gary said on the broadcast literally right before I came in this room to record that every game is the same and it's scoreless in the fifth inning, which is what it is again, scoreless in the fifth inning, because the Mets can't score runs at all, ever. They managed to split two four-game series with the Braves and Phillies, in which there were two doubleheaders in those series, but only because they walked off the Phillies twice. But they're still having major issues scoring runs. Pretty much every game's 1-0, 2-1. Like, it's getting to be a major problem, and they have guys back now, and they're still not scoring. So it's a continued problem.
I mean, it could be tired.
Yay! Giori just got a hit.
Conforto had already gotten a hit, so the no-hitter was gone. But they have been playing an absurd amount of baseball, so they very well could be tired. It's just painful to watch, though. Bad baseball. I mean,
the guys coming off the IL should be a little less tired than the bench mob that's been placed in the higher pressure situations and have been really the reason why the Mets are in the place they are right now. They're in first place with a slightly shrinking cushion, but still a small cushion. But this offense is futile right now. If you look at the stats, they're almost dead last in, I think, all of the major offensive stats right now.
They're definitely last in run score, them and run the Pirates. Scored. Yeah. Them and the Pirates are battling it out for last place. They aren't quite as low down the list when you look at like WRC plus, OPS plus, the weighted stats. They're still bottom third of the league, but more like 20th. So not like awful, but you know, they just can't hit runners in scoring position at all. They're not hitting home runs either. And they're not hitting home runs. Yesterday aside,
they hit a home run yesterday?
They hit two home runs.
Yes.
Yesterday. Back to back. Well. Pete Alonso and Billy McKinney hit back to back home runs. I was present at this very unfortunate baseball game yesterday. Don't have to talk about it. I did not watch. Yeah, I mean, it was not worth watching. I mean, there was a moment where they got back close, and so it became a ball game at one point. I mean, Jared Eichhoff got absolutely massacred by Kyle Schwarber and the rest of the Nationals, as one would expect. And so, I mean, his first start, Jared Eichhoff did decently well, not this time. Basically, every ball hit off him was either a home run or like a frozen rope that was caught on the warning track. And so he did not pitch well. And so for a while, it was like a pretty lopsided game. They never quite blew the doors off, but it was like 5-1 for a while. And then And then Pete Alonso and Billy McKinney hit back-to-back home runs. So it was 5-4. So the Mets had gotten back within a run. But then, yeah, that was short-lived because
things happened.
Miguel Castro happened. Another home run happened. And it was 8-4 by the end of the day. So, yeah, but on the whole, they are not hitting home runs very much. And, you know, Pete Alonso, especially, even though he hit a home run yesterday, he's just not been hitting home runs. And his home road splits are like really, really stark, which is kind of weird, especially in the power department. I think his like slugging percentage on the road is like way lower. Or like way higher. Oh my
it's
God.
Way higher.
Higher. Sorry.
Both stats are great. His home stats are.
I mixed beautiful. It up. Yeah. His home.
I think
stats.
He only has one home run at home.
It's more than one now.
I think it's three.
Right? Three wow. or something. But it's not good. It's not
because we were discussing it this morning in the comments. Hang on. Let me go look.
But yeah, I mean, Conforto and McNeil have kind of not been hitting since they've returned, at least not consistently, I should say, which is a problem. And they're clearly being careful with Conforto. Like they keep giving him days off a lot, which is fine. I get that you don't want to re-injure that hamstring. A hamstring injury is a pretty serious injury. And that's what both of them are coming off of, although Conforto's was a more serious injury than McNeil's. But you know, like they're desperate to score runs right now. And it's a problem when, you know, you finally have your regulars back, but they're half the time they're not in the lineup. So it's just kind of like, you know, but neither of them are hitting consistently. Brandon Nimmo was supposed to be back today, but it's been pushed back to Friday. And what's definitely totally not a setback at all, guys, nothing to see here. Their usual shtick. It's like suddenly the guy is not back when they said he would be, but we promise it's not a setback. So I don't know what's going on there, but he's still on rehab. Like he's in theory coming back this week. Tomas Nido and Jairys Familia are starting rehab assignments today. We record this on Tuesday, June 29th. They're starting rehab assignments. So they should be back from the IL as soon as both of them are eligible. And JD Davis, Linda yes. will be happy to hear, is starting a rehab assignment tomorrow and could also yes. return. And could also return at the end of the week / in early July sometime. So like the reinforcements are still coming, but like even once they've gotten them back, they haven't hit. Hopefully, you know, once they get back to, because basically like Nimmo, Nito, and JD, like once those guys are back, they're essentially at full health again, more or less. So they don't really have
JD for lefties. They cannot.
They really do.
Hit lefties to save their lives.
It's basically no. Alonso's the only threat. Yeah. And maybe Pilar. Kind
and
of.
And Alonso's splits are worse than I thought. So at home, he has an OPS of 635, a WRC plus of 92. And those are just the sites, the two stats I'm going to cite here. And then away, his OPS is 950. His WRC plus is 156. Christ. So there is a massive, massive split from his home stats and his away stats. Hopefully those will even out a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, you'd want to see that. I can't explain that. I usually like, it's hard to say. Usually you don't put much stock in home road splits, except when you have a park with extreme effects like Coors. I mean, Citi Field's a pretty, you know, offensive, hostile park as far as like hitting is concerned. It's not exactly a hitter's friendly ballpark, but like not to that extreme. There's something going on there. I'm not sure what it is. Like those numbers are like, regardless of how much stock you put in that, they are statistically significant. So I just don't know what's going on there. Is it something to do with the humidor? I have no idea.
I mean, the whole thing is the Mets have been overall much better at home than they have been away.
Yeah. I mean, the Mets definitely have won more games at home. So like, I don't know. I mean, the pitching, the Mets have won on the back of their pitching. That's been true all year. And the pitching's been especially good at home.
Well, haven't they played more games on the road so far this year?
Yes, probably. I believe that is the case. I think they're owed some home games. Like,
yeah. So I'm just throwing things out there.
The Mets aren't quite as far behind as far as total number of games played as they were. Like at one point it was as much as 10. They like were 10 games behind everybody else as far as number of games played because of the very first series of the year being canceled and or not canceled but postponed, and then various weather postponements. But they finally caught up a little bit. I think it's like 4 or 5 games now. So they're still behind everybody else. I think they still have the least number of games played in baseball.
They have, I think, well, they've played 39 games on the road and 35 at home. So they have some games to make up there.
Yeah. So they have some games to make up. Tyler McGill just gave up a hit.
Can we just blame the Nationals for everything, please?
I mean, I'm open to that because I have now seen four Mets Nats games at Nats Park, and 3 of them have been absolutely miserable. So
the fourth one though was with me.
Yes, and that was when Francisco Lindor had his really good game, and basically he carried the team by himself.
Yes,
that day.
Happy birthday to me on that one.
Yes, happy birthday to Kellyanne on that one. The birthday mojo overcame. But I was at the game last night, which was horrific. I was at the game. Michael and I were at the game where they got walked off against the Nationals, which was horrific. And of course, the nightcap of that doubleheader on the Saturday was not good. That was the game that Gazelman pitched and hurt himself. So, you know, like, it's just, I just feel like the overall, like, juju of me at Nats Park has been just awful since, like, I was at the Thor torn lat game.
Oh,
so I feel like Lord. Ever since then, it's just been, like, highly cursed. And I just can't, like, good things can never happen when I'm at Mets Nats games at Nats Park. But it's like, that's like, I can walk to the stadium. Like, that is by far the easiest way that I can see the Mets play. So like, I'm going to keep going. But like, God, it's been like, I remember we were walking back from the game last night and Michael was like, I think I need a break from being at this ballpark. Like,
yeah,
because it's such a bland, I mean, it's a ballpark.
It doesn't have the character.
That goes with everything else about the Nets. There's nothing original about them.
It's very bland. And like, unlike the games that we went to when Kellyanne was here, Michael and I, because it was kind of on a whim and it was a Monday night game and we knew it was maybe going to be Jared Eichhoff or something, we bought cheap seats for this one. And so when you're up in the upper deck, like we were, like when Kellyanne was here, we were by the visitors' dugout. So there were a lot of Mets fans. There were no Mets fans where we were. And so it was just like, we were surrounded. And Gerardo Parra was in the lineup. So it was Baby Shark.
I wanted to murder myself.
It was just awful. And like, just like surrounded by fans who were calling Francisco Lindor Frankie and just like all the stuff that I hate. And it just was bad. And everything that that franchise do annoys me. Like everything that that franchise does annoys me because they do the N-A-T-S, Nats, Nats, Nats. And it's literally stole that too from somebody else.
From the
it's
Jets. Like,
everything about that franchise is bland.
They have a mini green monster. I stared and I was like, this reminds me of the green monster at Fenway. And I was like, why?
Everything about them is bland or repurposed from somebody else. It's just like,
it's very frustrating.
Well, I tweeted about, I put out a tweet saying the Nationals are the dumbest franchise in the league. I said it. So that started a thread. And fellow librarian, Kate, her handle is at Librarian Kate, said, I want to say the Nats are the White Claw of baseball, but I realize some people like White Claw. So she goes, so the box wine of baseball. And so I responded, cheap and bland.
Yeah.
That was great.
And she gave us permission to use box wine of baseball as a podcast title.
I'm into
wine
it.
Of baseball. That is awesome.
I'm into
Shout
it.
Out to you, Kate. You are awesome.
Shout out to Kate. She also joined the Floral Hat Club.
She did. Recently.
Yes.
She did. We're starting a movement, the floral hat movement.
The floral hat movement is strong. Strong.
Although when I was at Citi Field early in the year, there were a ton there too. I mean, yes. I don't want to take all the credit for it, but
we saw one at Nats Park.
We did. We saw Nationals floral hats. They were not as cool as
I saw a Mets floral hat.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. There was also a Mets one. I was mentioning that they were selling the Nats version of the floral hats at one of the like little kiosks. The stands.
And it was not as cute. It was cool, but not as cute.
It was cool, but not as cute.
I saw a Yankees floral hat on a train one time. It was nice, but it was Yankees. So you can't have a nice Yankees hat, no matter how florally it is.
Yeah.
Floral-ish.
Yeah.
No so, matter yeah. the plurality.
There you go. As I almost choke on my coffee.
Oh, God. Sorry, Lynn.
We've got Tyler McGill with first and third and two out in the bottom of the fifth. And Tyler McGill's been pitching great, but, like, you know, the Mets once again have not scored any runs. So, like,
they're not even making Charlie Morton work hard.
No, they're not. It's just this offense.
Charlie Morton is friggin' Cy Young up there every freaking time.
This is just.
It's embarrassing, is what it is.
I don't know if this is a historically bad offense, but this is even like with the past June swoons, I think this is the worst offense that I have personally watched. And that is saying something because there have been some.
I feel like 2015 was worse than this before Cespedes. I don't know.
I mean, it's close. But at least that, like, you don't have an excuse anymore. Like, you were betting John Mayberry fourth. You are not betting John Mayberry fourth in this lineup.
The whole thing in 2015, half the lineup was injured at that point. Like, Darnell was out. I think Duda was out at that point. David Wright was out.
And there's the home run.
No, don't say that.
Yep.
No,
ball game.
Yep. Okay. There we go. Cool.
Time to change the channel.
All right. I'm going to turn it off.
I'm not. Oh, poor Tyler.
I'm sure the umpire, I screwed him, but.
Oh.
I mean. This is wholly
predictable.
Unexpected.
This is predictable. Like, I mean, I
know,
said it.
But he was doing so well.
Yeah, but he's not a major league pitcher.
I said it in like when the Mets pulled within one yesterday of the Nationals, when the Nats got two guys on against Castro and Ryan Zimmerman came in to pinch hit. I said, here comes the 3-run bomb. Literally the next pitch. Literally the next pitch.
Are those balloon animal penises or swords? No, are those swords or something? Because no, sorry, I just saw they have these animal balloons, or just the designy balloons in the Braves dugout, and like just at a first glance, it looked like a penis. That's
it's
all
probably,
I'm gonna say.
It's probably balloon swords. They make those.
Just at first, like a quick glance. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I got a little unfamily friendly there.
But it's at the point where whenever the other team scores more than like two runs, it's over.
Yep. Yeah. Even
so. I'm so tired of the narrative. Well, we're in first place. Well, that can change.
And that like, is changing.
It's
right
about
now.
To change.
It's about to change.
Like if they don't stop losing, it's going to change really quickly. I mean, as we were leaving the ballpark, I heard multiple people talk about how they feel like the Nationals feel like they're back in it. And why
wouldn't
they?
Single-handedly let them back in it.
Why wouldn't they feel that way? And like, I saw a tweet from one of the Talking Chop writers who I really like, Demetrius Bell. I really like his writing. He's great. But he tweeted like, I think it was today or yesterday. Like, normally I would say that, like, I don't like, you know, the Braves' chances in this series, but look at the pitching matchups. I think we can take two out of three because, like, and the only game he's like banking on the Braves losing is the game where DeGrom starts. And it's like, yep, sounds about right. Like,
is DeGrom allowed to hit? Because they could very easily lose that one too.
Right. I mean, sure. But he's saying, like, normally I wouldn't say this, but I like Atlanta's chances. It's like, the NL East realizes that the Mets are bad.
Yeah. Because like, even the Phillies could very easily swept the Mets. Very easily.
Yeah.
If their bullpen was not crap.
Yeah.
Like, there comes a point where, like, they're in first place. Like, at what point is that no longer a comfort because we're, like, 3 days away from that not being true anymore.
Yeah.
So like then what are you going to say about it?
And they're
we're only two games out.
Oh, it's not bad. We're getting pieces back. It's fine.
It's not fine if they're going to be like this. That I mean, at the same time, like they cannot stay this cold. They cannot stay this freezing cold.
In theory.
In theory.
I really hope they don't prove me wrong, but like at like some point, they very easily could be. Come around.
They very easily could be tired, but McNeil and Conforto have no excuse.
Yeah.
They haven't played in a month.
Yeah. It's just, the offense is really bleak. I just, like, the pitching is doing the best it can, and the pitching is more hurt than the offense at this point.
Exactly.
In the season, and they're still doing okay. Like, obviously, Jared Eichhoff got his butt handed to him yesterday. Whatever. It is what it is. Like, the fifth starter spot is going to be cobbled together until they can do something about it at the trading deadline. It's at the point where we've accepted that. But, like, you know, every other start should be, you know, a quality start or close to it. And that should be enough to win the game. And the Mets, you know, have the bullpen's had a couple blowups. Every bullpen does, but on the whole, the bullpen's been extremely solid this year. So, like, and the pitching has sustained really devastating injuries of late. Like, yep. Familia is on the IL; he's coming back, so it's good. You know, Lucchese season's over. Gazelman's season's over. So, like, and Carrasco and Syndergaard haven't thrown a pitch all year, and yet the pitching staff has still been one of the best in baseball. And so if they even had a league average offense, think about the lead they'd have.
Somebody said, Gary said they would have a 15 game lead with just a league average.
With just a league average offense.
Yep. 15 game lead.
That's what happened. What year was it? Was it 2019 where the bullpen lost 30, like blew 30 saves?
Yeah.
And like, if they had not even done like half of those or something.
Yeah, it was the same thing in 2019, except with the bullpen. Like, if they even had a league average bullpen, given their starting pitching and given their offense, they would have been fine. This year, it's the same, but with the offense. If they just had a league average offense, they'd be way ahead.
None of the cogs seem to get together at the same time. It's like pitching and bullpen are good, but then the offense is bad. Starting pitching and offense are good. Bullpen sucks. Like, come on.
And also, again, this is when they were healthy in April.
Yeah.
And they did nothing. You could have built up a lead then.
Like,
and you were healthy then.
I don't want to hear, like, I don't know. Like, I don't want to hear, like, they can't possibly keep doing this when, like, this is all I've seen from this group.
Exactly.
Like, I haven't seen this group do what it's capable of yet. And we're almost halfway through the year. So at what point does it become this is just what they are?
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
I keep bringing up the 2015 Nationals. Everybody thought, like, on paper, they were the best team. They were giving them the division at the beginning of the year before they ever played a game, and they just never clicked. They just never got going.
But they also also collapsed at the end of July when they came to us.
Oh, that was stupid decisions by Matt Williams, really.
Yeah. So I don't think. I don't know. See, that collapse is...
But they let the Mets hang around.
But they had this collapse that I feel like the Mets are having right now, but it's in the middle of the year. So there's a chance to come back from it.
Well, because the Mets are letting the rest of the NL East hang around, just like the Nationals did.
Yep.
And because we saw the Phillies bullpen, they're god-awful, and they're still in it. Bullpen still in it?
The NL East is bad, and like people keep saying that as a comforting thing, but it's kind of a cold comfort because all it makes me think every time you say that is how big of a lead we should have.
Yeah.
And the Mets are bad too.
Yep. The Mets
You're going to need that lead. Like, you build a big lead so that you don't have to worry about it when things go wrong. They didn't build the big lead when their schedule was easy.
Nope, and now they do is play these teams.
Well, and there's going to come a time soon, I forget what stretch it is, but they're going to play like Dodgers, Giants, Dodgers, like back to back to back.
I'm pretty sure that's like after the All-Star break.
In like 3 weeks.
They do get the Pirates right after the All-Star break.
No, they're getting the Pirates. They're getting another bad team too. Like, it's that team and then the Pirates right before the All-Star break. So in theory, they have a very large chance to do well and kind of regain some of their cushion there if they don't lose it in the next week or so.
I really don't understand why Lindor goes down on one knee to hit a pitch. Do you really think you're going to hit a ball while you're on one knee, dude?
His swing is just so like bad right now.
Like, really? You really thought you were going to do something with that pitch while you were kneeling on the ground?
He has one of the he's one of the few Mets actually hitting this month.
I know, right?
He has like a 119 WRC plus in June.
That's good, but not great.
It's basically him and Pete that have decent numbers in June.
Yeah,
there's no one else. No one else.
I just want my goof back. I'm getting real tired of every single person in this lineup. I need my goof. I need his vibes.
Yeah, it's ugly.
This podcast is sponsored by Ramp. Are you the decision maker in your company? Consider this. For the first time in decades, there's a better option for a corporate card and spend management platform. Meet Ramp, the only corporate card and spend management system designed to help you spend less money so you can make more. Most corporate credit cards offer points as incentives, but those points amount to less than their worth in real cash value. Ramp's business cards offer you cash back, real money in your pocket. Plus, you control who spends what with each vendor. And Ramp software collects and verifies receipts automatically, which means you'll stop wasteful spending and close your books in hours instead of days. Businesses that use Ramp add up to 5% to their bottom line the first year. If you're a decision maker, adding Ramp could be one of the best decisions you've ever made. And now get $250 when you join Ramp for free. Just go to ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy. ramp.com/easy.
Cards issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of FDIC. Terms and conditions apply.
Anyway, what's uglier than the actual Mets play on the field is, you know, at the end of the Mets Phillies series, the Advocates for Minor Leaguers tweeted a comparison of how the Phillies organization treats their minor leaguers versus how the Mets treats their minor leaguers, and kind of basically said, like, which organization would you rather play for? And in that comparison, it showed that the Phillies, like, pay a housing stipend to their minor league players at every level, whereas the Mets do not pay a housing stipend to their minor league players at any level. And also the Phillies pay their minor leaguers a salary for extended spring training, whereas the Mets do not pay that. So needless to say, this is absolutely inexcusable that the Mets aren't doing the absolute bare minimum. Now, we mentioned this last week. We talked about minor leaguers and fair pay last week. The solution to this is for every organization to pay its minor leaguers a living wage, period. Period. No team does right now. Like, they got a raise right before the start of the season. Major League Baseball, you know, raised the minimum required to pay minor leaguers by teams. But still, unless you're like a AAA player, like repeating the level, you're making that, those are the only people making above poverty wages. Everyone else is making like below the poverty level wages. And so they can't afford housing unless you supplement. Unless you give them a stipend, because otherwise housing is going to be like 80% of their salary. The Mets don't do that. So
that's ridiculous at this. I could see that under the Wilpons, just because the Wilpons are the Wilpons. But now you have a multi-billion dollar owner who can easily change this, and actually could be leading this change too.
Steve Cohen is literally the richest owner in the sport.
Yes.
Inexcusable.
One of the richest owners in all of sports.
Any sport. Any of the major American sports. Inexcusable.
And he could probably make these changes from top to bottom very easily without breaking the bank. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
We said it last week. It would cost $6 million for a team to pay its minor leaguers a living wage. $6 million. That's a drop in the bucket for Steve Cohen. That is money that he loses on the stock market in a single day and doesn't even blink an eye.
In a single hour, probably.
In a single hour.
Probably. Like,
that is nothing to him. That is, I think Michael said it, that is money that he would drop on the street and not even bend down to pick up. He would just keep walking. Like, that is how little this matters to Steve Cohen. And it is unacceptable that the Mets are not leading the charge here. They should be leading the charge here. And fans need to hold Steve Cohen accountable for this. It's not just about like paying free agents and giving Lindor his extension. All those things, they should do those things. They should spend money to win baseball games. But this is something that fans need to hold Steve Cohen accountable for. I am sick of seeing the like Uncle Stevie simps on Twitter give him a pass for stuff like this. I'm done. do not give him a pass for this. And I mean, keep holding his feet to the fire for this.
This is just also building a solid system from your roots up onto the top. Start treating them better when they first come, and you're going to have happier candidates and players when they reach the major leagues.
It's the right business decision, and it's the right human decision. Yes. Period. Ridiculous. I mean, we have a piece going up about this soon on Amazing Avenue. Myself, Thomas Henderson, and Michael wrote a piece about this. That should be going up. That's just an opinion piece about how fans should be absolutely outraged by this. And we will continue to yell about it, because the fact that the Mets in particular, obviously, like, no team's an angel here, including the Phillies, even though the Phillies are doing more than the bare minimum, which is more than what the Mets are doing. But until before the minimum salary was raised by the league, the only team paying their minor leaguers above what was then the minimum salary was the Toronto Blue Jays. That was the Canada. Yeah, because they're based in Canada.
Yeah.
So that was literally the only team. And it's not like, again, like, it's, they were paying them, like, they gave them like a 50% raise, which when you take 50% of the paltry amount they're making is not much of a raise at all, but it's still more than what the rest of the teams were doing. But again, like, this is all the absolute bare minimum. We should be paying minor leaguers a living wage across the board. And it would be a drop in the bucket for all these franchises, not just Steve Cohen. But Steve Cohen in particular has no excuse, because he's the richest of all of them.
And it's such a simple, seemingly simple change to make.
Very easy.
Into finance.
Just do it.
Yeah. Well, also, and also they had that, the Wilpons had that weirdo rule where the minor leaguers couldn't use their fancy new
clubhouse.
Yeah. And now Cohen did make the change that they can use that. Yeah. But so he's been paying attention to the minors. Like, you know, like, they were experiencing some fucked up stuff, but you stopped.
Like, he's not ignorant. He can't claim ignorance here. And, like, obviously the clubhouse thing was silly, but that's mostly like an aesthetic symbolic sort of thing, you know, like, it's very symbolic of how the Wilpons thought of minor league players and how they thought of players in general, let's be real, of the fact that you have to like earn your keep, rook,
no,
sort of shit. Yeah. But again, like, in the end, that's a symbolic thing. This is like actually, you know, pay for your employees to not be homeless thing.
Yeah,
this is like basic human decency. Yeah,
human
stuff.
Decency.
You can have them earn their keep by and also pay them a living wage.
Yeah, like, this is literally about human dignity. This goes beyond, like, you know, can they use the fancy clubhouse? This is like basic human dignity.
I mean, we're not asking them to get paid the major league minimum of, I think it's $550,000 a year.
$60,000 or something like that.
It's just, you know, a regular living salary.
Yeah, literally, like, just pay them like
so they don't have to worry about what food they have to eat, where they have to sleep, like, so they don't have to take on a second job I think some have taken on second and third jobs just to, you know, make ends meet.
And I mean, there are reports of, I think we covered this last week a little bit, but there were reports, this isn't specifically out of the Mets organization, this was actually out of the Orioles organization, but there were reports of players sleeping in their cars because they literally couldn't afford housing. There were reports of, you know, like, fundraisers, like, basically GoFundMes being started for players to be able to afford housing. This is cruel and inhumane. This is like, you know, it goes beyond, like, you know, stuff that isn't right. This is like, you are denying these players basic human rights. Housing is a right, a basic human right.
I mean, who was the minor leaguer also that posted a couple weeks ago the food they get there, where it was like utter...
Oh, it was like Fire Fest shit. It was like
serve that in cafeterias at schools, and they serve second-rate food in cafeterias at schools. So that's not great.
I mean, it was Ty Kelly that tweeted the, like, deli sandwich that had, like, two slices of cheese and, like, a slice of beef on it. It was, like, the saddest thing I've ever seen. It was, like, Fire Fest. It really was.
Just bad.
So yeah, I mean, there's just no excuse for that. There's absolutely no excuse for that. And we will keep yelling about it. That's inexcusable. And the Mets should be ashamed.
Yes.
Well, not just
the Mets, baseball should be ashamed.
Oh yeah, yes. Absolutely. Mets are not the only one
on this one.
Yeah, absolutely not. But they are the ones with the richest owner. So yes. they're the ones that can
make the easiest change easily, make the change most easily. Oh my gosh, I can't speak tonight. Yeah. Again, leading the charge on this. That's as simple as it gets.
Yep. So we will keep yelling about this.
Amongst other things.
So in other like more baseball wide news, we have a few things to cover. Firstly, we're just going to talk about this really fast because it just happened like right before we started recording. And right now it's just one report. It's not confirmed. There needs to be more digging into this. But this is TMZ, you know, TMZ is often, you know, TMZ is a tabloid, but they're often right. So TMZ reported that a woman has accused Trevor Bauer of assault. So that is a thing. But he claims it was just, quote, rough consensual sex. So, yeah.
Which that makes me curious as to why it was phrased as assault when it's from that. It could be construed as sexual assault.
Or rape.
Or straight up rape.
Right.
So we'll see. Yeah. Again, he's holding on that one for more information.
He's under investigation. He adamantly denies these claims.
Although she got a restraining order.
She sought a restraining order against him.
She successfully got it, right?
Sought and obtained. An order for protection from the court under the Domestic Violence Prevention Act.
So I'm assuming this was in Los Angeles, right?
Had to have been. Yeah. Earlier today in LA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So that is still developing. You know, probably want to know more information before we talk about it in any greater depth, but we will be on top of this. I mean,
for sure.
You know, like if you just look at his record, I don't think one can really be surprised that this has come up.
No, I literally tweeted in connection to him. Yeah, I put, it's almost like attacking women online was a warning sign that literally nobody cared about.
Literally over and over again, women speak out and warn people that these men are dangerous and no one listens. And then they do something really horrible and violent.
Yeah, it's like we're Shocking. Trying to tell you.
And like clockwork.
Yep, nobody listens.
Like, and it's just like, I'm just getting intense flashbacks to all these dudes in my mentions. Like back when it was, you know, a threat that the Mets were going to sign Trevor Bauer. And I was tweeting about, you know, how horrible all these things he's done is. And like, I'm just getting intense flashbacks to men being like, I don't get it. Like, what has he done that's so bad? I don't understand. Like, this is what it leads to.
Nobody is shocked by that. I mean, granted, it hasn't been confirmed or whatever, but nobody is shocked that this is where this ended.
No woman is shocked by this.
We should probably clarify that. No woman is shocked that this is where all this led to.
Like,
and he clearly got away with it too.
Yep.
He got his big contract. He got the attention he ordered. He made a big production out of it. He got the Met fans all riled up. So he got it. He got everything he wanted and then some. So why wouldn't he stop attacking women?
Not to mention was one of the reasons all this pine tar nonsense is happening right now.
Yep.
And good God, it's gone beyond.
Like
that's another story.
Like surely this will develop further and we'll bring this up again on the podcast when we know more details. But like, if you read that Sports Illustrated piece about how he approaches relationships,
he's a psychopath.
Are you surprised by this? This dude is a psychopath.
She's and gross.
I still want to know gross. Who these women are that Sandy Alderson spoke to who thought signing him was a good idea. I am still heated at Sandy Alderson. He does not get a pass here.
No.
His agent, probably.
We have not forgotten that Trevor Bauer was Sandy Alderson's guy that he wanted.
Yep.
We will not forget.
I was going to say, was Mickey Callaway. So was Jared Porter. Was Trevor Bauer.
We will not forget.
I wonder what all those dudes have in common.
I hope he at least quietly retires this offseason.
How's that investigation into the Mets work culture going?
Yeah. Well, they hired a lawyer and have procedures, so everything's fine.
Mm.
Yikes. Yeah.
So speaking of Pine Tar, since Kellyanne brought it up, we have our first player who's been disciplined under this new policy. So it's a former Met, actually.
It's always a Met.
It's always a Met. There's always a Mets connection. Former Met Hector Santiago was the first player to be disciplined for sticky substances. His glove was taken from him during a game the other day. They really made a big production out of it. They like put it in a bag and everything. Like they were on like some sort of police procedural.
CSI MLB.
Yeah, CSI MLB. That's our new series, CSI MLB. And they put it in a bag and like sent it for further testing. But apparently, like, so today we learned that he was suspended for 10 games. But they also said, and what was sort of a confusing thing, Jesse Rogers of ESPN tweeted, per source, the league didn't need to inspect Santiago's glove any further. The ejection and discipline are based on the umpire's report of having detected a foreign substance, which is absolutely nuts. Like,
really?
They just like looked at the glove and decided it was a foreign substance. And just based on their judgment, he receives a 10-game suspension. He is obviously appealing.
Because that's ridiculous. Ken Rosenthal also mentioned that I think there's a rule in that memo that says you can't have rosin in the glove.
Yeah,
no, confused about where he could put the rosin, or he put it on the wrong hand or something.
Well, he said basically just pats the inside and the outside of his hand on the rosin bag, and he didn't know, like, it's very weird because but that's never been it. I mean, obviously the sticky stuff as a whole has never been enforced until now, but like
this is whole, going like way too where far.
The rosin goes has also never been enforced once.
And I mean, to say that you can't put rosin in your glove, your hand is going naturally into your glove after you've covered it in rosin. So what are some pitchers supposed to do? Just tip their pitches entirely? It went too far in the other direction. I mean, I understand spider tack. I understand pine tar getting banned, but a blanket ban on everything is just ridiculous. And you're asking for a lot of trouble. We've seen a lot of trouble already. You're asking for pitchers to get injured, which thankfully that has not happened yet. It's a mess.
Like
with most rule changes.
Santiago claims that it was just, you know, rosin and sweat that he was using and that there was nothing else. And it's like, you know, when they made this big deal out of bagging the glove, you thought that like obviously they ejected him from the game. And there's really no way to like do that other than umpire's discretion. I kind of get that kind of has to be up to the umpire's discretion because it's an immediate decision that has to be made. But when it comes to actually suspending a guy under this policy, one could see how you bag the glove, you send it out to a lab for a test, you give it to a chemist, you have the chemist decide what the nature of the substance is that's on the glove. Like, these aren't hard tests to run. But instead, they're just like, well, the umpires decided, so we're going to suspend this guy for 10 games. Like, on what grounds? Like, if I'm the union, I'm furious about this. Like, where's Tony Clark?
Clearly, they're flying by the seat of their pants, basically. Like, they had no plan, clearly. They're just like, well, in 2 weeks, we're going to start doing this, and the umpires are going to have to figure it out.
And like, they've been so good so far this year.
Yeah.
And I guess they thought that like this threat and big show was enough and that they were never going to find anything. They're like, oh shit, we actually caught a guy. What do we do now?
Yeah.
Like, although, it's like they hadn't thought that far in advance.
But I also think the other thing is, it's just so demeaning for the players to have it done publicly. I mean, if you're going to do this and have them inspected, at least do it maybe in the clubhouse, not like right on the field in front of everybody. So you have pitchers pulling their pants down.
But if you wait till you get in the clubhouse, they can hide something.
They can hide it.
Well, unless you have an umpire escort them down.
I guess.
I mean...
Well, what if like ridiculous?
I'm not saying like go right in the clubhouse. I mean, just like at the edge of the clubhouse, out of sight of like the fans and the cameras.
But it's also ridiculous. Like they had I forget what team it was. Like I think it might have been the Phillies actually. They had a position player pitching and he got checked.
Jesus.
I mean, they said position players were going to be checked. They said position players were going to be checked.
There was a knuckleballer checked today.
Mickey Janis was checked
in the Orioles game. And it's like, that was like double demeaning because not only was it a knuckleballer and it's like, guys, it would literally defeat the purpose for him to use spider tack. He had just given up like 6 runs in like 2 innings. And they were like, we're going to check you.
And for those that may not be like pitching aficionados and not know like the differences between balls, a knuckleball has no spin on it.
Literally,
you don't want spin.
Go look up an R.A. Dickey GIF. It's the most fascinating thing, but a knuckleball has no movement on it whatsoever.
If you use spider tack, you actively make your knuckleball worse.
Worse. Yes.
Oh, Lord.
The whole thing is just...
It's well, just
and
bad.
I mean, there have been articles, I think it was by Rob Arthur. He wrote that the spin rates are way, way down, like, mm-hmm. incredibly down, like not even like oh, this could be an anomaly, like,
and shockingly like, enough, yeah. The Dodgers have the biggest decline
and the Reds had the biggest decline after Bauer
of any MLB team. Sure, it's a coincidence, but that said, like, even if you take Bauer out of the equation, it's still like they still have one of the biggest drops. So it's like, it's not just him, he's a big part of it. But it's not just him. It's,
yeah.
And we talked about this. Like, it's, I mean, we talked about this. It's organization. This is sanctioned by organizations. Let's not pretend that this is all on the pitchers. Like, organizations are encouraging and sanctioning this. So this is clearly, at least on the Dodgers part, and maybe some other teams that are collectively having a curious drop in spin rate. Like, this is organization-wide cheating. So...
I mean, I think the other thing is we're seeing those numbers drop is because it's a blanket ban on everything.
Every single
thing, which again, to me is ridiculous. You're asking for hand injuries and blisters galore that way. So I'm hoping that maybe this rule is adjusted. Just maybe a little bit.
Yeah. Come up with something that's league wide. Yeah.
Like, just say, like, spider tack and pine tar are banned. That's it. Everything else is, like...
Or come up with something. Say, here you go. Something. This is acceptable.
Right. Like, it's not hard. They already provide the rosin bags on the mound. So, like, they've proven that there's, like, a thing you can use to assist grip that's standardized across the league that they can provide. It's just that the pitchers clearly feel that it's not enough. And so just, you know, go one step further, say that this is like, we've created this like lab made mix of rosin and sunscreen or rosin and some sort of liquid. And we've made it into this substance and it's called MLB tack, and just give it to everybody. And that's the only thing you can use. If it's not MLB tack, it's illegal.
Yes.
But you know, also, seeing that the Dodgers have the biggest decrease.
Drop.
And, you know, spider tack is obviously cheating. We've established this. So that means the past few World Series winners are all illegitimate. The Red Sox, the Astros, the Dodgers. It's like
they were all cheating in some way.
It's like so...
Messy.
It's just messy. Baseball has no control over its own product. And then they like to pretend they do. And then they make a bigger mess out of everything. Like they didn't punish the Astros.
I mean, it's
now they're making a mess of this thing.
It stains.
Cora never got punished. Hinch never got punished.
It stains baseball in yet another way. As I
mean, Hector Santiago, for his unconfirmed whatever,
rosin
has already gotten more punishment than any single Astro has ever gotten.
Ugh.
Yep.
It's ridiculous.
Yep.
This rule is ridiculous, and I hope it gets called out in the CBA negotiations.
Oh, that's going to be ugly. I mean,
this is going to be fun this offseason.
There's going to be a strike.
There is.
There's a strike. It's just which is another reason why circling back to the Mets, another reason why I get so pissed when they perform so poorly.
Yes.
Like, this is your, like, this is, they didn't have they had the COVID shortened season and, like, you know, everything got screwed up last year. And now you, like, this might be the last, like, somewhat normal baseball season we get for a while. So, like, this is your chance. And, like, please don't screw it up, because we might get a strike next year and we might not have a goddamn baseball season. So,
like, and you're wasting Jacob DeGrom.
You're wasting DeGrom's prime. Another year of DeGrom's prime gone, and then next year there's going to be a strike. Ugh. So, come on.
God.
That hurts my heart.
I know. Right? One last, like, baseball note that we should mention is that happened today is that Tyler Skaggs' family is suing the Angels for negligence in the pitcher's 2019 death. So they are the lawsuit specifically names former communications director Eric Kay and his predecessor Tim Mead, saying that the team and Mead failed to properly supervise Eric Kay, who was a known longtime opioid addict and provided drugs to Skaggs and other Angels players. So that's a developing story, but just, you know, that's been an unfolding tragedy for years now. And clearly the team bears some level of responsibility for what happened. And hopefully they are held to account for this, because it's absolutely awful and tragic.
And you have to think the Angels knew something. These were your employees.
Well, look who is at the, well, okay, this is not the, no, this is the baseball side of things. You have Joe Maddon at the head right now. I mean, I don't think he wasn't the manager when Skaggs passed away, but look at the organization as a whole right now and who they've hired.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how long it took them to fire Mickey Callaway.
I mean, it's just, it's an organizational culture that needs to change from top to bottom again. And you could probably say that about almost, I would speculate, again, heavy speculation, about most of the MLB clubs have a poor working culture.
Yep.
That allows things like this to happen.
Yep.
Baseball
is a mess, and people need to be held accountable for what they do, what they say, these dumb rule changes, and least of the problems, bad strike calls. I can't stand the umpires right now.
Yeah. I mean,
sorry. That's just on the field, though.
We've had a whole segment about how bad umpiring's been this year, and that has not changed at all. No. But yeah.
And actively giving them more power, especially with the substance, illegal substances, is another.
Yeah. I mean, it's not good.
That's another bad. No. That's a judgment call.
Well, and they've had like, what, a month to prepare themselves for it?
Yeah.
Like,
again,
if they do something wrong, can you blame them?
God. Yeah. You can't really blame them, because they've basically expected them to enforce this with next to no preparation at all.
Yeah.
And with really hazy guidelines.
No guidance at all. So it's kind of like,
So them, like, pantsing Sergio Romo on the field isn't their fault.
Sergio Romo pants himself.
Yes.
But then you have, I know they're supposed to be, like, no checks in bad faith, but you had Joe Girardi last week make the umps check Scherzer.
Yeah, it's game.
Which is just ridiculous.
Yeah. But at the same time, what was I gonna say? Totally lost my train of thought. Umpires, Sergio Romo, Girardi. Nope, it's gone.
That's okay. You know, if you think of it, you can chime in.
Yeah, I'll just blurt out, but the umpires!
But the umpires! But yeah, this episode turned out angrier than I was expecting, but there's a lot to be frustrated about with baseball right now. But
we've made it to the rage phase.
But we will end the show like we always do with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week. baseball related or otherwise. So Kellyanne Healy, what is your walk-off win for this week?
My walk-off win is actually from a week and a half ago when I visited Washington, D.C., hosted by our lovely Allison McCaig and her boyfriend, Michael.
Yes.
And they took me out to the ball game.
My walk-off win last week, and it's Kellyanne's walk-off win this week.
Yes, she was not on last week. Just especially that first game where Francisco Lindor hit two home runs and Allison and I screamed happy birthday to Jacob deGrom and got the most reluctant wave back.
Which was amazing.
Which was amazing that he acknowledged it at all. So, yeah, that was just, it was a wonderful, wonderful weekend to spend some time with great friends, to watch baseball. It was just a fantastic weekend. Learning about the DC Metro, which was, I think the DC Metro is probably the best one I have been on, which is not saying much because I think the only subway I've been on is in the cities, but DC Metro is so nice and clean and big and pretty.
Yeah. One thing I will give DC is they have very functional public transit and yes, I love them for it. Linda Cervich.
The umpires. I remembered what I wanted to say.
Oh, yes. Right on cue. Linda Cervich, what were you going to say?
How these checks are supposed to be random, but like, who decides what inning they check the pitchers? Like, does that come from the league? Do the umpires before the game say, hey, I'm going to check DeGrom in a second? Like,
I think the umpires probably decide it.
Unless you
so like in the course of the game, they're like, oh, fourth inning seems like a good time. Or I don't like the way that
very much seems that way to me.
I think it's mandatory after the first inning. And I can't remember what the memo says, but I believe it is mandatory after the first inning. And then the second one, I think, is at the umpire's discretion. And then a manager can challenge it at any point.
Garrett Cole wasn't checked until the third inning one game.
Okay, then maybe I'm just nuts. It's entirely possible. Yeah. But I don't know if I finished the tangent because someone walked in the room when I was in the middle of it. So I had to mute my mic. Girardi had the challenge the other day. And you could totally argue that that was a bad faith.
Oh, it absolutely
challenge.
Was.
And oh, that, yeah, that is specifically against the rules. That's like the one thing you're not supposed to do, except again, the umpires can decline that challenge. They didn't. And it clearly got to Scherzer, which did what it was supposed to do. It's just like, it's ridiculous. This whole rule.
Yeah.
The end. That's all I have to say. Sorry to interrupt your walk off
win. The only thing I want to know is who comes up with the randomness? That's all I want to know. That's my only question.
The umpires, because they're not random enough to begin with.
I guess so. Because that's just another thing they have to deal with. It's like marked down. Well, in the third, we're going to check him. In the second, we're going to check him. Then if they bring in a reliever, we got to check this guy. And then if he pitches two innings, then we'll check him then. But it's like,
we got to check some position players too.
Yeah, we'll randomly check Michael Conforto as he comes running in. Like, I don't know.
Especially the ones who pitch. Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, do you check the catcher while he's sitting in front of you? Like, do you pat him down? Like...
Oh my God. And the rookie. Oh my God. I felt so bad for Tyler, his first start. That was ridiculous.
I know. You're all excited walking off the field. And it's like, well, show me your pants.
Show me those pants. Show me those pants, pants. Pants yourself in the middle of the public right here.
The crowd
was giving him a standing ovation and then immediately went to booze.
Whoa, did McCann just go yard?
Did he? Wait.
Oh, sorry.
Oh,
yes!
No.
Yes. It'll be tied if he did.
I did it!
Yes, tied.
Oh, my God. McCann was so overdue.
I love this team again.
I hate the Mets.
See, no, that was literally me on Twitter. I'm like, I'm so mad at the Mets. No, wait, I love the Mets. And that's honestly, that's the feelings Mets fans go through in a span of a game, like at least five times. I hate this team. I love this team.
I hate them. This team. I would die for this team.
But oh my God, I hate this team.
Oh my God.
So All the right. thing I delayed with my my blurting of the umpire. We got a happy moment.
We just stalled for time, and we were some live reacts on the pod.
McCann's home run is actually Linda's walk-off win. No, I'm kidding.
Linda, no. What's your actual walk-off win for this
week? I do legitimately have a walk-off win. I mentioned it last week that we were having animals at the library. And this was like the first big program we've done since 2019. So I was freaking out about how it would go. I mean, I've worked with this group before, and they're very super nice. Like I said, I got to snuggle the kangaroo the last time they were there. But then I kept looking at the radar, and it was like 20% chance of rain at 1 o'clock when the show was supposed to start. And it was outside, so we could spread out. So it's like 20%. And then they're like, oh, and then at like 4:30, it jumped to 50%. I was like, oh, we'll be done. It'll be fine. I was like, oh, yeah, because we were going to bring them upstairs into the community room if it rained. But they came, and I was like, no, you can set up. It'll be fine. At 12:45, the skies opened up. But you could tell it was going to be a quick moving shower. So it rained for just like 10 minutes. And then they did their program, and it was just cloudy. It was very, very muggy. But you just kind of felt a mist, which actually kind of helped because it cooled you off because it was so muggy. And then just as they got all their animals back in their van, the skies opened up again. So it actually worked out really well. And we got about 75 people, which I was really happy with.
That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's excellent.
And considering the weather was a little iffy, and you know, parents still, you know, a little wary about masks and COVID and everything, I was very happy with the turnout. And well, she has a tortoise and a hare. Well, it's a bunny, but they say the tortoise and the hare to like make it library related. And during her presentation, she said she's been hearing from parents a lot that kids are having trouble making friends right now because they just don't have that interaction. And so she was like, her tortoise and her bunny are best friends. She's like, I literally can't separate them because they would get too upset if we separated them. And she was like, these two don't look alike. They don't speak the same language, but they're best friends. And she was like, all you need to do is be kind, and you can, and that's a good way to make friends. And I was like, oh, that's such like a nice message. Like using a bunny and a tortoise about how to make friends, especially now. So that was, I thought, really sweet. I got to pet them. I got to pet some goats. She had a macaw, and the macaw was a big hit because he can speak 100 words.
Oh, and, my gosh.
And so then she was like, what do you want? And he goes, cracker.
That's fantastic.
So he was a big hit with the kids. They all go, whoa. And then she had an alligator, too. And she said, she's like, I'm not afraid of any of my animals. She goes, I love all my animals. I can take care of my animals. And she goes, but I'm afraid of the alligator. And so she goes, because he's going to grow. He was a little baby. And she was like, but he could grow to over 6 feet. And she goes, and he can seriously injure. And she was like, alligators are reactionary. So if you put him, like, if you release him back into the wild, he'll immediately know what to do. Unlike other animals who've been domesticated or who haven't been in the wild, they can never be reintroduced, but alligators can. And she said he was found in somebody's house and he hadn't been fed in 2 months.
Oh, God.
And well, so she was like, people think like, oh,
he's like, I can keep these guys as pets.
Yeah. No. Yeah. So that's how she gets her animals, is when people find like them in like houses and stuff, she comes and rescues them, and then she keeps them and like takes care of them. But then a lot you just can't reintroduce into the wild. But you know, but other than that, like, she had hissing cockroaches too.
PSA, do not keep wild animals as pets.
No. Yes. No.
Not a good idea.
No. Good idea. Yeah, definitely not alligators.
I was gonna say, Lynn, what was your favorite animal?
that I saw that day?
Yes.
Oh, there's the kangaroo, but he was all grown up, so I couldn't snuggle him.
Oh, but that's adorable, though.
Yeah, but she had him like in a little enclosure and he was like hopping. I got to see him hop.
Oh, that's awesome.
So yeah, and, the one woman came up to me and she's a very good patron. I know her and her daughters from coming in. She goes, my daughters weren't too impressed, but she goes, but I love the kangaroo. She goes, how often do you get to see a kangaroo?
Right?
Yeah. It's just like the novelty of it is so awesome.
So that was our summer reading kickoff and love. PSA again. Go to your libraries over the summer. Oh,
wait, don't say it. I'm like 3 seconds behind you.
Oh, damn it.
Yes. Okay, no. Double. Yeah. Ground rule double, I think.
Okay. Yeah,
I thought it went out.
Anyway.
No, ground rule double.
PSA, but go still, visit your libraries and go visit, see animals.
Yep, go visit your libraries, find out more about animals, check out your library's programs because I'm sure they will have animal programs or also lots of fun summer events. So,
and check out books about animals, learn about them because they need to take care of this planet.
And guys, the best thing about all of this is it's free. You don't have to pay a dime.
Libraries are free and it's awesome.
Take advantage, people.
Mm-hmm.
You guys, we have to do a live pod of something for a second. So Noah Syndergaard.
Oh my God. Yes. I just saw this.
Oh,
I
know. Okay.
Okay.
Oh no.
So Noah Syndergaard just tweeted, meanwhile, check out my book club.
Oh my God.
Tweeted a link to the TMZ report of Trevor Bauer.
He is savage.
Oh my God. Noah takes no prisoners.
I feel like I need to screenshot this tweet because it might go away.
I was going to say he might delete it.
But also this makes me feel like, oh my God, this is like more true than we think.
Right?
If another baseball player is commenting on it.
That's
well, Jeff Passan tweeted like his lawyer was vehemently denied it and was like, oh, well, this woman was asking for it.
Of course.
Yay.
Of course. Your usual discourse. Excuse. Awesome.
Yep.
But I just, the fact that Noah Syndergaard hates Trevor Bauer with such a fiery burning passion is the most amazing thing in the entire world. I'm screenshotting this tweet because I feel like it might go away. But truly incredible scenes. Meanwhile, check out my book.
Oh my God. I saw it. It's like, oh my God.
Right.
Bauer just would have killed everything on this team. Like
all
the good vibes
would be gone instantly. Anyway,
let's get back to walk off.
We're not going to talk about
Allison, what is your walk-off win?
We're not going to talk about you must not be named anymore, but I just needed to shout that tweet because incredible.
It's incredible.
Anyway, my walk-off win is that I went to Citi Field for the first time in almost 2 years on Saturday. And
oh, that's fantastic.
We got to see a Jacob DeGrom start and we got to see a Mets walk-off.
And those seats were fantastic.
And the seats were awesome.
I'm so jealous and I'm very upset I couldn't go.
Shout out to Danielle. She bought out the Delta like Sky Club porches. It wasn't like the Delta Sky Club itself, although you do have access to the indoor part from where we were, but it was like one of the little patios that like overlooks home plate on the field level. And it was like the best seats.
Ooh. Yay, they took the lead.
Sorry,
I'm screeching.
Sorry to interrupt your wonderful walk-off win.
No, it's a very good walk-off.
But it was an excellent walk-off win.
It was so good, you guys. Like, I just, like, I didn't expect, because, like, going into it, I mean, obviously, like, originally the plan was for my very first baseball game since COVID to be at Citi Field because we were going to go on May 30th and then that game got rained out. We went all the way up to New Jersey / New York and it got rained out and we were devastated. We made the most out of the weekend, but you know, it's still a bummer. But so this was actually the first game back, but it wasn't my first baseball game, obviously, because I had been to the games in DC and I had been to one in Baltimore. But it was still my first game at Citi, which is a different thing entirely, obviously. Right. And so I kind of expected to like be emotional when I first like entered the ballpark, like, you know, when you like go through the tunnel to your seat and you just like see the ballpark, like it hits you. And I expected it to like hit me. And it kind of did when I went to the Orioles game, because that was my actual first game back. That hit me a little bit. And I was expecting to get like super emotional when it hit me. But I think I was so distracted by how cool the seats were, because like I had never been in any of the like suites or clubs at City, because like I'd never sat anywhere that cool. I'm usually in the nosebleeds, right? And so like I think I was just so excited by how cool the seats were. I was like, oh whoa, look how close we are to the field. Look, I can see Jake. He's right there. Oh my God. And I was just like so overwhelmed by it that I like didn't have time to like be emotional and have it all hit me. But then like the first like three notes of Simple Man played and I almost cried. Like I just wasn't ready. I just wasn't emotionally ready for that to hit. And it just hit different. Like when they started playing Simple Man, I was like so overwhelmed and just so happy to be back home, you know, like it's just so good.
Did you get Narco? I can't remember if you.
No, not in that game.
I'm very jealous you got Simple Man, though. I'm dying because I remember.
Oh, no, wait, we got Narco. What am I talking about? We got Narco. He just blew the scene.
Oh,
yeah.
I remember when everything was shut down last year. I think like Simple Man came on the radio and I just started sobbing. Hey, Jakey.
Yeah,
and now to this day, anytime Simple Man comes on, without fail, I have to scream, "Jakey!"
Yeah, there's video of me dancing to Narco as well, which was also really great.
It's both of us. Thank you very much.
No. Sorry. Yes, there is also video of Kellyanne and I dancing to Narco in 2019. But yes. I meant on Saturday.
I meant this time. Okay.
On Saturday, there's a video. Of me dancing to Narco. But yeah, it was just, and obviously the fact that the Mets walked it off was icing on the cake. We saw Jake's quote worst start of the year, meaning he gave up 2 runs in 6 innings, which is like, you know.
Terrible,
awful.
His average
was he ill? Like, oh.
He raised his ERA to a nice ERA.
That's true.
True. He has a very nice ERA now. But anyway, it was just amazing to be back at City. So that's my walk-off win.
That's fantastic. I'm thrilled that you had a good time.
I feel like we need to rein ourselves in and get back to this baseball game, which is apparently unfolding. apparently,
well, the Mets are winning 4-3, which is fantastic.
Yeah, they've scored 4 runs. It's a miracle. That does it for the show this week. You should check out amazingavenue.com, check out all of our fantastic content. Like I previewed on the show, myself, Thomas, and Michael wrote an article about the Mets minor league situation, essentially unleashing the exact same rant that I just unleashed to you in verbal form. So if you want to read that in written form, and of course Michael and Thomas articulate things much better than I do, so you should read it because their writing is in it as well. So you should check that out, and as well as checking out all of our other fantastic content, game recaps. I have the meters for you every week, Mets morning news posts every day, analysis, all of that good stuff. Check it all out on amazingavenue.com. Join Kellyanne in the comments. Say hi. And you should follow Amazing Avenue on all the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. You can follow this podcast on Twitter at A Pod of Their Own. You can follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Surovich.
And you, Kellyanne?
At LRBELLARE-BEE.
You can also email the show, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. Please subscribe to the show, Amazing Avenue Audio, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate and review the show. It really helps people find it. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. Let's go, Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting.